Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 260, recorded July 30th, 2014. Living La Vida Cloudy. It's time for This Week in Google, a show that covers Google, the cloud, the Twitter, the Facebook, whatever our esteemed panelists want to talk about. That's because they are so esteemed. He's just steamed. That's Jeff Jarvis, the king of the rant from the City University of New York.
Cooling down my bursitis.
Oh, ow. Aww. What is bursitis? Is that a painful butt?
Well, actually, that's where it is. Yes, it's an inflammation of the bursa.
Ooh.
Don't be 60, people. Don't do it.
It's all downhill now, Jeff.
Hit the pause. I thought it was an inflamed bro.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Jeff has had a no good, terrible, very bad day. A flat tire, a broken Mac.
Yep.
A light bulb just blew out. You should just get under the covers.
Yesterday, I had a 3 o'clock appointment and a 4 o'clock appointment, and I transposed them in my other calendar. And so I told them both to change, realizing I was wrong for each, then trying to get back a hold of them to make sure it was back where it was. I'm telling you, it's just not working.
Well, we'll take it easy today. It's going to be a nice day, relaxing, fun day, gathering with the friends. Jeff is a blogger at buzzmachine.com, author of Public Parts, What Would Google Do, and many other wonderful things. Gina Trapani's here, founding editor of Life Hacker, host of All About Android.
Hello.
She is the creator of ThinkUp, a fabulous analytics platform for your social media, thinkup.com.
Yes, hello.
Hey.
Happy to be here. I like kind of chill days.
We're going
to
chill today.
We could talk about Jeff's computer decision.
Let's talk about my computer decision, yeah.
Wait a minute. What computer decision?
Well, my Mac is borked.
So you're gonna need, well, you know, it's perfect because Apple just came out with new Mac Pros. Do you want a desktop, a laptop? What do you want?
Leo, now you're gonna make fun, but this is the advancement in the world. You're living in the past. I'm debating getting anything.
You don't need a computer. Hell no.
In the cloud.
Yeah. Get a Chrome.
I think the idea that you have to have a computer upon which you download things and store things was an idea for a while. But the structure of phones where you have, you know, local apps, but basically all your data is up somewhere else. That's the way it operates. And the apps can operate anywhere. That's the way Chrome operates, the same architecture.
Hmm.
I'm thinking the only reason I got your what's your box, your thing, your what's the printer box that you advertise once?
Oh, yeah, the XPrint server. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got that going.
So, print
so
my Google,
Mac
print.
Had
yeah.
two reasons to exist.
Okay.
One was as a print server.
Yeah.
I then messed up I can't get the printer back into the Google Print because I deleted it and I don't have a working computer to put it in there. So, but I'll figure this out. And the only other reason for the last year I have used that machine was Skype for you.
Oh, wow. Well, don't get
That's
a new
it.
One.
That's it. So I was thinking maybe to go get a mini.
The only reason I have a desktop computer is so I can have big screen real estate. That's the only reason. And I have at home on my desk, a 31-inch monitor, 4K monitor, and two 27-inch monitors. That you need a computer to do that. It could be a laptop, I guess, but I have a Mac.
You can do a laptop to that. I mean, I plug this laptop.
Yeah. You're not saying, when you say computer, you mean laptop or desktop, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just thinking, I don't need to get anything to replace this.
You're getting rid of all local storage, basically, is what you're saying. You don't need local storage, like a hard drive, a physical hard drive, right, Jeff?
Right. So this is the show about the cloud. I think I'm about to become...
Well, the cloud needs an endpoint in your home.
Cloud.
You can't just... You do have to have something at home that attaches to the cloud.
Home.
Just doesn't flow into your mind. So
Chromebook.
I think Chromebook is enough. You have a Pixel. You have several Pixels. That's enough. Yeah.
What's Chrome? Yeah.
Why would you need anything more? You don't edit video. You don't do. You're not a photographer.
Oh, but if I did.
You don't
do photos,
play games.
Do that all right now.
If you were a photographer, you would not want a Chromebook.
Well, yeah,
this is the use case, I think, for regular folks or for someone like Jeff, who primarily is a writer, right? But like the photo thing is where I kind of stop, because I know you can upload all your photos to Google Plus Photos, Google, and I do that. I have my auto backup on my phone now, but I have gigabytes and gigabytes of photos that I took pre-Google Plus that I don't really want to upload to the cloud, because I know to get them out, you know, it'd be a multi-gigabyte download, and why wouldn't I just have the hard drive in myself? But I get the argument for not maintaining your own, you know, I've got a stack of external drives at home and my archives of stuff, you know, before the cloud ever happened. And I don't know, though. It just makes me nervous.
I'm lucky, Gina.
Go ahead.
I have never been organized, so I don't have any of that.
But to be fair, you have a use case that doesn't need a desktop computer. You don't edit video. You're not a serious photographer. Serious photographer, the shooting camera raw.
Serious photographer with a bunch of volume. But the photo
it's
here
not,
and the photo.
It's not purely for storage. It's because of raw processing photo raw. You need Lightroom. You cannot do that on a Chromebook, period.
Yeah.
So there's certain things that you need to have a computer for, but you don't do any of those things.
Yeah. I don't design.
And you're not alone, by the way. Most people don't.
No.
The kind of photography most people do with their smartphone, it automatically uploads to Google Plus. Google Plus gives you all sorts of great features that for a normal person is plenty. Most of my photography is done on Google Plus. I don't use Lightroom for a lot of it. So that makes sense. I'm just trying to think of if there's anything that you might want to do.
I can now do Microsoft Word documents for those Luddites who still use it in Chrome. It's not the greatest, but...
No, I don't think you need a computer. When you sat down at your Mac, what would you do? You would do Skype. You'd do that.
Nothing.
That's it.
Right.
Nothing.
It sits off to the corner over here, off camera.
I think you're fine.
And the poor corpse. And
get rid of it. Save some desk space.
Yeah.
I got my Pixel, which as you know, I adore. But I'm thinking for trips, because they're so interchangeable, you know, I might get the HP or one of the new ones that has 8 or 10 hours of battery.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I would like to get that Dell, but I think they've taken that off the market. Yeah, maybe that's it. So we got for Michael, who's in sixth grade, we got the Acer C720. It's $200. It's little, it's light. If you lose it, no big deal. And that's the best part about the cloud. You log into jeffjarvis@gmail.com, and now everything's there.
I'm the same as if I am anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing about a Pixel is it's between 5 and 6 hours of battery, which is when I'm around town, it's absolutely fine. No problem. I go to the office, I plug it in. I come here, I plug it in. I go to the
You don't Starbucks game, you don't hours. Do photography, you don't do video. I mean, there are a lot of uses for a computer, but none of you do not. I think you're a good candidate, actually, to live in the cloud.
The whole idea scares the crap out of me, but I think it's great for
you. Well, you're a programmer, Gina. You're not going to program in the cloud.
That's the thing. I can't do it because that's right. The software that I spend most of my day in is a text editor with a bunch of plugins.
I mean, I guess you could do that. I've seen.
But that's going to change too.
Yeah, there are some web-based editors. It's true. Hooked into Git.
Here's what I'm trying to argue.
I think you want to run your debugger locally on a local CPU. I really.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Well,
I would feel. Look, programming is hard enough. Here's my issue with cloud is if it makes anything at all harder, then I don't want to do it. It's the same problem I have with using the iPad as my main computer. Yeah, you can do it, or your phone. You can do it, but it's just a little harder. Well, why would you make it a little harder?
Yeah, right.
All right, but what I'm trying to say is directionally where this goes, that you wouldn't have ever stored all your documents up on this, you know, somewhere else. It's been offered for a long time. You know, Apple offered it ages ago, and it was awful, and you didn't do it. But it's fine. It's now reached its usable critical mass.
You bet. It's reliable enough. It doesn't go down much. Furthermore, because we've gotten used to this idea, because we have multiple computers at home, at work, maybe several at home, several at work, and what you want is the same data set on everything. And the cloud is the only way to solve that.
And as disorganized as I am, to be able to sync before, I was awful at it.
Right.
Terrible.
Right.
No, so, you probably have reams of documents that you produced over the years, Jeff. What do you do with those? Have you just uploaded all of those to Drive at this point? Do you use Dropbox?
I don't save everything that way. I mean, I have boxes of clips in the basement, which my wife hates.
Yeah, you'll get rid of
years and years and years ago. But no, you know, once my book is done, I don't care what the file is.
Can you, here's a question I don't know the answer to. Could you take a large USB drive, plug it into your Chromebook and download your entire Google Drive onto it as a local storage? Can you do that, Gina? Do you know?
Yeah, you can do that.
You can.
Yeah.
So why don't you do that?
So, yeah. And you can work offline, right? There's offline support.
But I'm just thinking.
You could do that without the USB.
To save your stuff locally, which I think is a good idea. I mean, Google's not going out of business, but why rely on some third-party corporation to store your stuff? You should have a local drive.
Or
but if you can do that, then that's fine.
I could sync it to Dropbox.
And by the way, you know, we're doing this in entertainment as well. Do you buy discs anymore? Do you rent discs anymore?
No,
very much now we stream everything. It's all in the cloud. Even, you know, I don't want to rent movies. I just get them on demand. I mean, I do rent them, but I guess I don't want the disc.
Right.
Aren't we all moving in that direction? Is physical media is gone?
Or even just the downloading the giant file, legitimately or not. Like, I got tired of that. I was like, I don't want to have to download 2 gigabytes. I don't want to wait that long.
No. I want to start watching right now.
Yeah, I'll spend the whatever $15 on Google Play or wherever I need to buy it. Just get it right now and not have to worry about it.
Same thing with music. We used to have record collection. And every time you moved, the biggest pain in the ass, you box up these records, you move them. All of those, you have them all. You don't even have to buy them now. Anytime you want, you listen to Google Music. And it's all 20 million songs. The entire collection is there.
Right, that entire bookshelf behind me. Now, on the other hand, I went into my favorite rabbit hole is to go into the New York Times time machine.
Love that.
And go to old clips. I found a great one this week. I wrote about it on Medium. What happened to newspaper illustrators when photography came? And it was right in the moment of disruption. When Lincoln died, the illustrators rushed on train from New York to Washington to go and look at everything and sketch and draw and then draw their finals on the train on the way back to get them in.
Wow.
When McKinley died, photographers existed and they didn't have to exist. So one daily newspaper had 85 people in the art department, many of them eliminated, right? It's just a picture of what we have today. This is a wonderful piece. So in this process, I found another book about fire and electricity and what was the third thing? But 1901 book about, oh my God, technology. And it just so mirrors the thoughts we have today. I love it. So I bought that good old book and I like that. But the truth is I could also, because it's so old, I can buy that as digital. I don't need that as a book. It's an emotional thing.
I kind of like having the book though.
You're holding on. What I'm trying to say to you is you're holding on to your computer the same way you're holding on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right. I think
you're right. I am sort of clinging to it just because I'm like, I need the local, I need my hard drives. They make me feel better. But yeah, you're right.
Realistically,
I don't use them during the day.
It feels like what Jeff's doing is a little risky.
It does. It feels like he's leaping off a cliff into a... I'm trying to imagine just having a Chromebook would freak me out.
that's why I wanted to raise it today. Yeah, to see what you thought. But I'm not seeing a reason to go out and spend $600. The minimum I can buy, I'm not going to buy a Windows machine. Sorry, Paul Thurrott. Not doing it.
No, you'd be nuts to buy a Windows machine.
It would drive me insane. So the minimum purchase would be $600 for
a Mac Mini. Don't do it. You could even hook up a big screen. If you wanted a big screen monitor and a typewriter keyboard, you could hook it up to your Chromebook or get a Chromebook Mini, Chromebox.
But my keyboard is great, and I don't need a mini. I mean, I can hook this up to the... It's hooked up right now to my monitor.
And the truth is, Dallas is in the chat room saying it's very risky. It's not risky. In fact, it's less risky because you're trusting the cloud provider to keep your data safe. And I think that it's mature enough now that that's a reasonable thing to do.
The only issue is privacy.
The only issue is if you had stuff, nude pictures of yourself that you didn't want to trust in the cloud because the NSA would pass them around because you're such a stud. Then you would want to keep those in some local fashion that is not connected.
You want to encrypt them, Leo. You want to encrypt them.
Or you encrypt them.
Yeah, and let me give you
wait a minute. Wait a minute. How are you encrypting them? You can't.
Yeah, that's the question,
You
right?
can't encrypt How? Them. Not reliably. Because you no longer have a computer. The only way to do that reliably is to do that locally in a local CPU.
Okay. Yeah.
Or I could email them myself.
What do you do for a Chromebook for encryption? Is there a plugin?
I don't know. Is there a TrueCrypt?
Well,
is there a way to...
Email, yeah. You mean email?
Well, but see, okay, so if that's happening, then, yeah, Google has this new thing where there's some JavaScript that's doing the encryption. It's possible to do public key crypto with JavaScript only.
Now, the other thing...
It's not exactly trust no one in that case, however.
Back to the risk piece. I accidentally screwed up. Pardon me, I'm writing this long, boring thing now, and I screwed up and erased, you know, five paragraphs I've just written. And by God, Google versioning, it was there from last night. It was fine. Boom, one button, I was done, and I was happy. So I never versioned my stuff that way. And trying to get through Microsoft Word versioning was torture. It never stored the version you wanted. It was, it was awful.
So. Yeah, the doc stuff is really great. I mean, it's really great. Yeah. In fact, today my coworkers pointed out, and I actually think I missed this in the changelogs. I think it was the week I was on vacation, but you can do like suggested edits. You can either give somebody edit rights or you can give them the right to comment, which actually turn into suggested edits when you can then sort of
accept
or reject.
We didn't do it.
It's great. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Great.
It's like, this is the way this is supposed to work. I mean, they really have, and the versioning is awesome. And you all get that for free. You never have to actually physically save your file. I mean, it's great. It's great modern software. It's great. So, Jeff, what happens when your publisher sends you some crazy word template that you have to use for your book, which is what Wiley did to me? They sent me this like crazy word document with like all these different templates and formatting and like roundabout thingers. And I had to, I don't know if you remember what I had to do, but I had to hunt down the right software to open it. I guess an author of your caliber can say, screw you, I'm going to use the template I want.
Yeah, I think so. It's just words. The thing that I'm writing now is this probably about 50,000 word white paper on, now that your friggin' internet has ruined everything, Jarvis, what now? And it's all my thoughts on new relationships, new forms, and new models. And I put the relationship stuff up on Medium already. So there's now a Google add-on, I can't remember, Librio or something like that, that will turn your Google Doc into an ebook. In most any format. So I'd use that.
The chat room says I should just buy you a computer and send it to you.
No, but we're trying to be pure here.
I don't think you should. I don't think what you're doing is risky in the least. In fact, let's face it, it's much less risky. How many people have lost data on their home computer? Many.
Well, IO error. That would have been enough to put me into cardiac arrest a year ago. Now I just said, oh, crap.
Ben, that must be me, says, what if Google locks your account? What are you going to do?
Well, yeah, that's the big risk. That's the big risk that your account gets locked out.
It would be a good idea to have a backup of some kind.
I need to know how to sync to Dropbox. I'm sure it's just
Well, that's
Google
why I asked you, and this would be the best way to do it. If you can, plug in a hard drive to a Chromebook and say, Google, give me all my data and put it on the
But
on the
even
hard drive.
Better. But then I've got. Then I didn't do it for a week, Leo, which is what the case always was. I never backed up, right? So what
you want syncing.
The beauty of Drive is it does it automatically. What if I had a structure where
does
it
Google,
did it automatically?
So that's interesting. So
could
obviously,
you do an IFTTT?
And if this, then that?
Yeah, like if there's a new document in Drive, then sync it to Dropbox?
Well, you know what? The problem is there, Gina. There's a new document to Drive every three characters.
Yeah.
So what you'd probably want to do is do a daily.
Right.
You do an IFT, if this and that at a time.
It only does it every 15 minutes anyway. It doesn't. Not real time.
That's fast
15
enough.
Minutes is pretty good. I mean, you know, even in the case you said you saved it last night and you deleted, I mean, that would have still had the revision. It's Dropbox
chat
can
room.
Save revisions.
I need, chat room, I need your help. We want some way to sync all of your Google data in real time, constantly in the background, to some other service. It could be Amazon. It could be Dropbox. It could be Box.
It should have been what Backupify did. Unless
your Backupify used to kind of do this.
Oh, yeah.
Are they still alive?
They have been much constrained. I know that they sent me a note saying we're not going to be doing – I think they've gone enterprise.
Oh.
But I wonder, Backupify for Google Apps –
I mean,
they do
I have
it.
The time machine, the Apple time machine here in the home, but that does still stop working.
What you want is a time machine for Google.
You want a virtual time machine. You want a cloud time machine.
This will do it every day. Set it and forget it with Backupify's automatic. It's only three times a day. I think that's sufficient. Google Mail, Chat, Drive, Calendar, Contact, and Sites. It uses 256-bit encryption uptime. You actually answered our question, Jeff. Backupify.
Wow, everybody should do this, regardless of their Chrome OS only.
But this is for apps. This is not for public. You have to have the paid. And that's what happened. They went enterprise. They used to do it just to... They do it for Salesforce, for social media, and for Google Apps.
Wow. Wow.
That is a great idea.
That is. That is great.
It backs up to Backupify.
There needs to be a consumer solution for this.
Yeah, and that way you're just, you know, it's not a lack of faith in Google. It just answers that question. It's that security blanket.
Google real-time API. This is from BB16 in our chat room. There's an API. So somebody could easily write using the API.
Yeah,
you'd have to give them your credentials. Gina, why don't we do this? You and I, we'll do this. We'll write this. I'm a little Python. You're a little bit rock and roll. It'll be great.
Yeah, just give me your username and password, your two-factor auth credentials, and like we're good to go.
That's done.
You need to give it access, obviously. All right, here's another one from Cloud HQ. This is great. Chat room, you're great for this kind of stuff. CloudHQ.net, how to synchronize Google Drive and Dropbox.
Oh, wow.
So this is a product, I guess, I gather, that will do this. Huh. It will back it up to a variety of services.
Yeah, because the ideal is it just does it for you. So you never think, it's just like the essay I wrote about the death of Control S. What, I'm not saving that way anymore?
Yeah, right. Who needs that?
And so you want a backup that you don't ever have to think about. It's just there. And yeah, you're paying for it for pure security. You may never look at it for 5 years. You know.
So Cloud HQ does this between a variety of things. Evernote, everybody pretty much. This is really interesting. Google Drive, Gmail, Dropbox, Box, Evernote, OneDrive, OneDrive Pro, SharePoint, WebDev, which means you could... WebDev would be great because then you could go to somebody and say, I want to set up a WebDev server on SoftLayer, and then you'd own it, and it would be your private thing, and it would automatically pick. SugarSync, which is a backup solution. SugarSync might have a... let me see if SugarSync has a Google Drive solution. So this is the only safety net that I think I would say that if you had this... I would have no problem, Jeff.
Right.
None at all.
Right. And then my presumption is that more and more, and we're going to go to gig connectivity, and we're going to go to absolutely costless storage and processing in the cloud.
Yes, that's pretty obvious that's going to happen.
So then your arguments about photo, why?
No. There's certain things you need. A lot of local storage and a lot of local CPU, and among those are high professional photo editing of raw files, video. No, I'm sorry, you're never. And the reason is not that. Of course, the cloud servers will have more power than your local CPU.
Yes.
It's the transporting large amounts of data back and forth that's required by this kind of stuff.
Okay, but if it's a gig line,
maybe. Maybe down the road. It's certainly not doable now.
Well, AT&T,
and it doesn't make sense to do it now. It's nutty to do it now.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that
someday
we go there. I mean, there's Wii Video. You can edit video now through the cloud, and the difference in video is you actually get an advantage because rendering locally on a slower processor.
I agree 100%.
Rendering up,
it's the transport of the data that is prohibitive.
Right, but the difference here is you transport it once, and then you render every time on the cloud. You may be better off than having to render slowly locally.
No, I understand that argument. Try it and you'll see why you don't want to do it.
I know now, but again, I'm just saying, so go to the next incremental improvement.
And someday everything will be the size of a dot on your forehead and you won't have to even have a keyboard.
Yeah.
But for right now, I wouldn't recommend that. But the things that you do, which is writing is very small amount of data. Perfect.
I used to work on a green screen with a mono, cursor.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to my buddy at Carbonite and ask him, why don't you do this? Because this would be a great product.
It really would be. It's such a consumer product.
And there are a few. This Cloud HQ looks like it does it. Looks like it's the personal plan is $100 a year. They don't say how much data, but it will synchronize Google Drive.
HQ is not storing the stuff. It's just a transport.
It's a synchronization. That's right.
transport. Yeah. So the data is not that much.
Yeah. So you could say have one drive, you know, the Microsoft solution or Dropbox, and synchronize them. That seems like a I'm going to try doing this because increasingly everything I do is on the cloud. Yeah. The other thing you're giving up is you don't, I mean, desktop Word is, I think you could argue, better than Google, the Google Word app. Or
But I don't edit it anymore. It's the only time I would have anymore. To do Leo. I don't care at all about Word. I don't use it at all. I write entirely in Drive now, and I see the advantages of doing that, right? The versioning is automatic. The saving is automatic. The functionality is easier. I'm not doing fancy formatting, right? I'm writing text. And if I were doing fancy formatting, I'd be doing it in Quark or whatchamacallit.
InDesign.
InDesign, thank you.
But you can't do that without a desktop.
No. Print. Print?
Right. Ah,
right? Where are we now? We're in it. Design is separate from content, right? Presentation is separate from content. That's what the web did. So what you really care about is your underlying data, your content.
Right.
And then design is a layer on top of that.
Well, as you said, there's a point where the phase change happens, where you no longer use illustrators, suddenly you use photographers. And we haven't quite come to – I think we might be at that point. Maybe.
Well, we're at that point for
some people.
My video students, right? So we're at that point for writing,
for
transactions, for communication.
And it's happening very fast. I mean, I think every time I said 2 years ago, oh, forget physical media, you will no longer be buying DVDs or Blu-rays, or people still yell at me when I say that, but it's true.
It's true.
For all but the most, you know, audiophile or videophile, you know, people still like Blu-ray. But
I just want it known that I am living.
Good. La vida cloudy.
You are. I mean, Jeff, you've been kind of fixing to make this transition for a while. I think at this point, you know, it makes sense for you to just to drop the default assumption that you have to have a Mac. So I would say just don't buy a Mac. And look, worst comes to worst.
You need something
you need a Mac for, you go to an Apple Store and buy a Mac. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like but you know, see how long you go. I'll be interested. Yeah, I'm interested to know.
I think you don't need to. Until,
yeah.
My Osborne 1 with, what was it, 64K. In 1981, cost, I think, $3,500.
Yeah.
$84.
Jeff, this is a momentous moment. You have bought your last
personal computer. It is. I think so. Now, here's the question, Leo. Here's the question. What happens when you get pissy and you start cursing me coming in on Hangout instead of Skype?
Well, we have to live with that.
Right.
Hangout's going to get better, I hope. WebRTC will get better, I hope.
You're doing it for the show, Jeff. I appreciate you've gone totally.
Chad, are we okay with it? I mean, he's on Hangouts now, right?
Yeah, the one issue that we're having, and it's on our end, is I think we need to upgrade our processor here, because Hangouts, for some reason, does not
frame rate's not great.
Yeah, and you can see it, and this is my assumption here. I'll bring this back up here. And this is what I assume is happening. Is that our processors are just getting maxed right now.
Yeah, all
just because
of them.
Hangouts, whoa, I don't know what is going on there.
Wow.
But yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They are pegged. Look at that.
And yeah,
Jesus.
You can see that. So, I mean, that was a very quick, you know, it could be some other issue, but that was, you know, my quick diagnostic was that for some reason Hangouts is using up tons of CPU usage.
The other issue
may
is
do
that.
It may actually use all it can get. So it may be.
Well, if it's doing that, it's still, the frame rate's real bad.
It's still not great. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that's the next issue. If I look
the other problem I have is that I paid for the 50 megs Verizon service.
And Genius is only about 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And they give me 25. So I've got to call them. This is what was our conversation last week. I have to take the breath at a day to go call my provider. Say, I'm paying you for this. You're not giving it to me. You know, I don't want to have to do it.
Tomorrow's my day off. It's Comcast day.
Oh, it is?
Oh, man. Comcast day.
Friday? Oh, Friday.
I just did the same thing to upgrade mine. But
and Verizon's going to go equal up and down. So I'll have 50. When they give me what I pay for, I'll have 50 up with my 50 down.
You know, increasingly, my calendar, my to-do list, my phone book, yep. This is all in the cloud. I have to say, this isn't actually, well, No, I am going to have one day for going to the DMV and one day for Comcast.
Hey, you want to go to the DMV together? Because I need to go to the DMV, you know, too.
Yeah, let's go to the DMV together.
Okay, sure. We'll and make then, it a day.
It's like saying, I got to put aside a day for a root canal.
Yeah, so we'll get breakfast, go to the DMV, and then get dinner.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Good. I decided with Comcast, I'm going to go to the store. I've decided that of all the options, phone, chat, store.
Yeah, you can stare at somebody.
I think the store is the best. I've always had the best service in the store because you're actually looking at them.
You're looking at the person, yeah.
The only problem I've had, Leo, is I've gone into the store.
I'm going to bring a box of chocolates.
They're not the best at the whole system sometimes, so they will then mess up something else in your account.
Well, that could happen with anybody. My experience with the store is they're usually pretty the most competent in the people.
And they're
in the
nice,
store.
And you got to face them. And they're nice. Nice to them, and you bring a box of chocolates.
I've had great results in the store, so I think that's what I'm going to do is going to, hey, I just want to add Turner Classic Movies. Can you help me? And then we'll see. Should I record it?
Wear your Google Glass.
Hey, you know what? That's called defensive Google Glass, where you don't use it, but you just wear it. The threat that I might be recording
this. The observer effect.
You got to think.
You're hoisting the observer effect upon them.
You got to think that Comcast, particularly right now, they're very sensitive. So if you started any Comcast conversation with, do you mind if I record this? You'd probably get better service.
I saw Craig Newmark yesterday at an event here in New York. Wonderful, amazing, delightful Craig.
Sweet guy. Yeah.
He pulled out from his pocket. I hope I'm not telling the story out of school, Craig. Pulled out from his pocket because he watches Twig. He pulled out of his pocket a Verizon executive's business card. And he said, I just saw this person this morning. They're aware of you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. That could be a mixed bag. Oh, dear.
Awesome. They're aware of
Then I have my Nexus 7 with me. They were kind of like, oh, is that the Nexus 7? You know, is this the one? This is going to have to go to a museum.
All right. So
you're on the blacklist.
Normally, we'll do news on this show. And there's actually a good amount of Google News, but none of it really got us excited. So what I might just do is run down the headlines. And if either of you have anything to say, just throw it in. How about that? And then we still want to do the change log.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've decided no more computers for Jeff. When did you buy your first personal computer, Jeff?
My Osborne 1 in 1981.
So this is, you know what? It's been 33 years.
Yeah.
I think it's time to stop. Stop the madness.
Now, Leo, when was the last time... I'll ask it this way first. When was the last time you did serious photo editing?
Oh, I do it every day. Not every day, but I do it frequently.
You really do?
Yeah. The most recent one I put on Plus. Lisa
not
got
plus,
her.
Not Plus.
No,
not
no,
plus,
no, no, no. But I. Plus. No, so
like,
Lisa.
Yeah, he posted it to.
I posted it to Plus. Lisa got her 49ers season tickets. So I took photos with my 5D in camera raw. So these are 30 or 40 megabyte files.
That's a beautiful.
Okay,
imported it into Lightroom, processed it in Lightroom, uploaded it to Google, and posted it.
It's a wonderful photo, Leo. But with all respect, would your phone have done that much of a different job with those kinds of photos?
See, Jeff, this is why you can live in the cloud because you can't tell the difference.
No, if you're doing your Hawaii landscape.
Yeah, yes, no, I'm telling you, Jeff. You can't tell the difference. That's why
I'm
live in the cloud.
Through,
believe me,
Hangouts at a
my
very,
phone cannot do this.
Okay, fine. All right. That's what I'm asking. All right. Gina,
it's interesting. Like, I'm of two minds. I think about this in the context of, you know, what kind of computers is Etta going to use? How am I going to introduce my daughter to computers? She's one.
Well, she's
okay. And I realized that, you know, on one hand, I want to build a PC with her. I want her to understand how to snap, you know, the RAM onto the motherboard. And I want her to know what it is like to buy a case and put a computer together because I want her to understand what's going on underneath. On the other hand, most likely, I mean, first of all, she's already started to use my phone, right? So she's already been introduced to her first computer. She picks up my phone and goes like this. It means that I want you to start my app because she's got like a little toddler lock app. But on the other hand, I think I'm going to get her phones and tablets and Chromebooks, right?
Absolutely.
Because
she is never going to have a PC.
Never.
You don't think she's ever going to have a PC?
No.
I mean,
no, that's my point. That's my point, Gina. By the time, I mean, of course, Etta is going to come on. I mean, you know, Jake was starting them at 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The big moment in our family was when we thought that we had to, you know, take Jake through living Bill Gross's magnificent living books, and we had to, you know, do this for him. He'd say point at that, and we'd go click on it because this mouse was really complicated. Then my parents went up with him. Of course, they didn't know what the F a mouse was, so he just grabs the thing from them and starts doing it.
And, right, he's like, here, let me show you how you do this.
Right. So Etta's going to be using things and creating things. I mean, there's great. I forget what the name of it is. There's a programming app for kids that's called Turtle something in tribute as an homage to the old Turtle MIT stuff. That's really wonderful, and there's great stuff. Yeah, but she'll be creating and doing phenomenal things without the need for this notion of a computer. It's like saying, son, you really ought to know how a carburetor works. What?
Yeah, no, I know. I learned a lot of patience, and I learned a lot about computers by building one myself, by installing Windows, you know, from scratch, by Googling what the hell is this DLL and how do I fix it, editing the registry.
I
know this is really old school stuff, but like this was like me figuring out, and also part of me figuring that out is gaining the confidence that I can fix anything that happens that comes my way because I fixed so many things to begin with. And I think so to give her a tablet or to say, you know, you've just got Chrome, right? You've just got access to these web apps. And if the web app is down or if you run into an error, there's nothing you can do because that
saying. She doesn't have to put in the motherboard to know how to do that.
Right.
I mean, listen, I ordered a Heathkit ham radio once.
Mm-hmm.
Am I less... You know, because I don't know how to fix a radio and put a new tube in, you know, and then things change.
No, in fact, what Ed is going to need is she's going to need no code. She's going to need no Python. She's going to need no REST APIs. That's the new building a computer.
That's true. REST APIs. That's true. REST APIs is sort of the new.
She's going to need no Angular.js and no .js. She's going to. Those are the bits and pieces that are the Heathkit of the future. It's software. It's not hardware. Hardware, commoditized.
It's a done deal. Okay, that I accept.
That's fine. You know what? A great thing to teach her Python when she's six? Hell yeah.
Well, it even goes back, Leo, full square, to as old as we are, is what did you do in the original days of computing? You went to the lab and you got time on the mainframe.
Right.
Now everybody has time on the mainframe, as much time as they want.
Sorry.
Oh, whew, I was afraid it was me.
I was shouting at
Chad. Oh.
I had already pulled on my headphones because Jeff was talking to me, so I couldn't tell that you were talking off mic. I thought you were talking on mic.
Shouting at Chad. That lower third overlay problem, apparently.
Right, I fixed it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't teach a kid how to build a crystal radio set. You wouldn't teach... I mean, it might be fun. And there is this whole make movement that is really retro in many respects, and I don't have anything wrong with that. But really, if you're saying, well, from a practical point of view, what are the building blocks of the future?
It's code. I ordered Bill Gross's $200 or $300, whatever it is, his 3D printer. He has an amazing... He's really reduced the price of a 3D printer phenomenally. So what's Edda going to do? Edda's going to be able to do CAD software to make things that she can then get physically in the 3D printer and make them fit together and do things with them. I mean, Jesus, that beats Heathkits.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, also, what's that project, that Google project? The one with the snap, you know, the phone that snaps together the different components. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's similar to putting together a PC, right? It's just smaller and.
Well, the other thing, too, is we learn in different ways. I mean, the story I always tell about Jake in programming is that I thought you had to learn those charts with the diamonds and the arrows, and you have to plan everything out because every developer says you got to know everything before you do it. And what do?
Somebody
showed him how to dig into a program, tear it apart, put it back together, see what worked. That's the way you learn.
Times change.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I accept that. All right. Listen, don't buy a Mac. I want to see if he's ever come to a place where I have to give in.
And I'm actually glad, Jeff, that you raised this issue because I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the time has come.
It occurred to me it was a step change in cloud world. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to continue to buy computers because of the stuff I do. I need a computer. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that time will come for me at some point, too.
The problem is for you, then they'll go half your shows. Sorry.
No, that's fine. We'll move on. We'll do more code.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, code's exciting. I'd prefer to talk about code. I think that's much more interesting. And it's very similar.
Back in the day, when I started watching Twit, and you guys would start launching into specs of a new monitor's out.
And well, you're not a computer enthusiast.
No, I'm not that way. But I'm saying, even now, we don't care anymore.
Well, some do. Some do.
But not to the detail that we used to.
You know, it's very much like stereo equipment. Remember how I'm old enough to remember where there were people who are just really into stereo equipment. And the fact the music they were listening to was totally secondary to the fact that they built the perfect stereo. And if they listened to music, it was the 1812 Overture because the cannons and the bells were really a good test of the subwoofers on their Klipschhorns. And there were stereo magazines, how to build stereo. People talked about total harmonic distortion and RMS wattage. And it was, you know, then there came a time, and I think it happened in the 60s when Rolling Stone came out, where the content became more important than the hardware. And that happens over and over.
Let me play to your point, though, in a different way, right? So my father was not a mechanic. I'll tell you this way. Confession moment. So for my sixth grade science fair, which I won, I built electronic bongos.
I love it. What does that mean? And what did they do? Tell me.
It was little egg cups with metal, and you could tap them, and it just caused the amplifier to go bing 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 like a drum, right? But it was a kit. It was not a kit. It was instructions, and I built it, and I did the chart about why it worked this way and all this kind of stuff. But I had to build the amp, or I had to take an old radio amp and put it in a new case and a new speaker. I had to build that, and the thing just tilted every which way. It was as if designed by Escher, right? And my father, this is kind of a Howard Stern moment. My father came down and said, "You're so clumsy, you couldn't stick your finger up your with two hands."
That's mean.
It was. It explains a lot about me.
This reminds me of last week's Masters of Sex. It's all about the mean daddy. Did you watch it last week?
Good show.
One of the best episodes of television
really
I've ever seen.
Really good. Whoa.
Most of it takes place in a hotel room.
Yeah, it's really good.
And the backdrop is...
And I fall in love with her. Jeez.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, I loved her from day one. Yeah, she's gorgeous. Lizzie Kaplan.
Lizzie Kaplan. She's one of them. Anyway, so my father and I never went and tore apart cars and did all that, right? Let's say that you did. Let's just say you did.
Was he mechanical or no?
He was an engineer. He's an engineer
by
training. Okay. But electrical engineer. So he wasn't a grease kind of engineer, mm-hmm. no physical stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Etta. So let's say that Etta enjoys physical engineering. She's not going to build a Google self-driving car because it's too complex. It's too delicate. It's you're not going to. Yeah, maybe you can plug in some things to it. But these days with cars, a lot of us run by computers. That chance of really being able to run the thing is gone, Gina. You're right. And there is something lost there. I'm not denying that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Anna's going to have so much more fun.
She is. She's gonna have, and I'm going to have a lot of fun.
It just changes. You know, there's a guy said, I didn't tune into this show to be less techie. This is not less techie.
No.
If you're a hardware fan, this is very disruptive to you. And hardware doesn't go away, by the way. Hardware persists. Hardware has to. Servers and all of that. And there'll be plenty of people who build servers and all of that. But what happens is the mainstream of technology moves into software. And I think that's been coming for a long time. And it's, that's software. Gina, I think you'll back this up.
Yeah.
Software's where it's at.
Here's my prediction. Etta's revolt is going to be that she goes to Renaissance fairs and ends up caring nothing about technology and just plays
Mommy,
the lute.
I'm going to be making buggy whips. It's the future.
I'm going to be like, aren't you excited? The FCC approved this GPS chip that I can just embed under your skin and now we can always be in touch. And be like, nope.
No, Mommy.
Nope, I'll take my spiral notebook and a pen. I'm
Your
good.
Generation and all this technology ruined the world.
I got to tell you that, though. Neither of my kids is technical. They both use computers, but neither of them are geeky. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't count on Etta being anything that you want her to be. Let's put it that way.
Oh. Yeah, no, you're right. And certainly the novelty of it isn't going to be there for her the way that it was for us, right? Because it's not new, right? I mean, if she's... It's just going to be around her. It's going to be part of her life.
Well, I wish, you know, the happiest day of my life was when Henry said, hey, can you teach me how to hack? And I said, great, we're going to start with, let's start with Python, and then we're going to, and then he said, no, I just want to get into my grades and change them. Said, well, you've got to learn to code first. Oh, no, that's too.
Yeah, it's too much.
No, I don't want
to. That's too much.
It's everything. My father loved golf, and he tried to get me out to golf. I hated golf, and it all ended once on the driving range when I ended up pulling back my driver and hitting him in the shin. Accidentally, be very clear, because I'm clumsy, and that was kind of, and then he ended up hitting me in the head with a ball off a drive, and I didn't. No, not gonna work.
A good walk ruined. All right. Here are the headlines. According to the cable companies, it's not the cable companies that threaten net neutrality. It's Google.
This was pretty ridiculous.
This is a classic reversal, but I still don't understand what their argument was.
In a filing to the FTC, Time Warner Cable says the controversy over internet providers charging websites for access to special fast lanes is a, quote, red herring. The real danger is that Google or Netflix could demand payments from them. See, they live in a cable. They're living in the cable world, which is exactly how that works, by the way.
Yeah, and they think that the Google's going to put up a paywall right. for them, which is absurd.
They're living in the past. They're living in the days where you pay HBO to carry HBO on your cable company and then charge the customer. And that was how the financials all worked.
Right.
It's not going to happen because Google's not going to set up a paywall.
No.
No. I hope.
No.
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 Not their business model.
Doesn't make it's really a very old fashioned way of looking at things. This is, by the way, what's happened now with the debate, and I'm not sure exactly what to think about it. We were talking about on Security Now the debate between Level 3 and Verizon over who's causing the congestion, and Verizon says, well, it's Netflix / Level 3, their carrier's fault because you're pumping. It's all asymmetric. You're pumping so much data one way, and so it's not really a peer relationship in the sense that we're symmetrically sending data back and forth.
Oh,
so we want money from you because it's not, and that's how peering works. And I don't know what a good argument against that is, but
Netflix just did a deal with AT&T.
Yeah, you know what? That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're going to do deals.
That's so what's going to happen.
The cable companies are indeed charging for service.
Yeah. Google X has a new project to collect anonymous genetic and molecular info from people to help detect disease earlier. This is the Wall Street Journal.
What interested me about this one was that Google X Lab really is the closest thing we have, I think, to Bell Labs.
You bet.
Right?
Maybe it's better.
It's not as big.
Yeah, I think it's better than Bell Labs.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. So how?
Well, Bell Labs was very much focused on AT&T. What technologies could make AT&T money, I think, always.
Always. They did things. They did pure research. Things that they didn't know were going to have an impact on them.
Give me an example.
There's even an argument that Unix wasn't going to be terribly useful to them.
Okay, because Unix was probably one of the great. Bell Labs invented the transistor. They invented Unix. They invented so much of the technology that we use today.
They did a lot of astronomy and weird stuff.
Okay. It seems like Google's even going farther afield. I mean, Google's business has nothing to do with autonomous vehicles or the human body. This reminds me of 23andMe in some ways. The baseline study will collect anonymous genetic and molecular information from 175 people initially, later thousands more, to create a picture of what a healthy human looks like. It's being led by a 50-year-old molecular biologist named Andrew Conrad. He joined Google X in March of 2013, 70 to 100 experts. I think this is – Larry and Sergey are a little bit more open to the idea of putting money in for – I think for the public
wheel. I think you're right there, but it's also smaller. Now, the question – I live near the old Bell Labs, and it's
– Is it massive?
One of two major facilities, and it's phenomenal. It's huge, and that parking lot is just empty now.
Yeah.
And it's quite sad because so much happened there. It was phenomenal. Does Google X have to be as big as Bell Labs? Do you need as many scientists to do things? Is it more distributed? You know, if Google is our most successful technology company, as AT&T was in the time, and they're doing this for society and for the future, which I believe they are, you know, is Google X big enough?
Yeah.
Some people complain it's too big. They're doing too much crazy stuff. But maybe they're not doing enough. I don't know.
1957. Maybe you saw this in school. Hemo the Magnificent. This is from Bell Labs. You wouldn't see this in school today. Wow. They're quoting Leviticus.
No.
This is 1957. I guess they did a series of educational videos. So that doesn't help AT&T.
No, they did a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Boy, didn't you love it when they yeah.
Wow.
When they rolled the projector into class, weren't you happy?
Oh, they had major Hollywood movie stars in there. Yes.
They did.
Love the movies.
I know you keep explaining to me
Jim.
That this is a picture of a home.
Jim, come on now. Let's get cracking with this. Look, you know, this is the film for my science screen. Take care of it and keep it in focus, will
yes,
you?
Yes, okie doke, Doc.
All
look,
right, guys, let's get set for a rehearsal. Yes. Everything works this time, boys.
This is like a real Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
My magic screen film all set up, Jim.
Well, the screen is ready.
And what's his name, the guy on the right?
Oh, a great character actor. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Fiction and science. That's a pretty good team. Say, what's the big show about today?
Hemo the Magnificent.
Hemo?
Hemo. That's Greek for blood.
Oh, blood.
This was entertaining to us, Gina.
Yeah.
Well, don't get any on you.
Well, actually, just not having to do classwork was entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. So. Just I think we could watch TV. I think he was the voice of Winnie the Pooh, but I'm trying to place his name.
Wait till you see what I've got dreamed
up. Chat room will tell us. And who's that guy?
No, the chat room is far too young.
He's a movie star.
Come on, magic screen.
Magic screen? See, it's in the cloud.
Hey, what's going on here?
Well, that's Mel Blanc. So they really, I mean, this is big bucks. And I think you can safely say that this is not a moneymaker for AT&T.
I don't understand. This is an educational video about
there was a whole
blood.
There was a whole series of these. There were quite a few of them. Wow.
So you know, Google doing
Sterling
this,
Holloway, is that right? Is that who that is?
Maybe. I might spend yeah.
Like I read this article about Google doing this, and I think why is Google doing this? Why isn't a medical arm? I mean, I know that Larry and Sergey are particularly kind of obsessed with health issues because I forget which one of them has the predictor gene for some disease.
Right.
I forget which, but I don't know. I think that their intentions are good, and of course this data is being collected, you know, anonymously and all that. But I just wonder, it just seems like whenever they do projects like this that involve massive amounts of data collection, and of course data analysis and data collection is what Google's good at, but there's always that question of what are they doing with it, and there are privacy concerns, and I know, Jeff, like there shouldn't be, but there are. It makes me worried that they're going to do more harm than good, you know, like because the headline is, you know, why is Google, you know, indexing your DNA?
Well, in fact, the MIT Technology Review, Antonio Regalado writing, says Google X's project to study human health. That's no Apollo 11. It's a secret lab. he really poo-poos this. Says it isn't a moonshot. I mean, come on. I don't know. It seems like, I mean, we can be.
But I think Gina's got a really important point here, which, and I believe that these guys really mean it, that health data should be open for the good of all. It's a cause for them.
Yes.
And you're right, Gina. There's a risk that if they mess this up, then they ruin their own cause. But if they do it right, we are limiting the knowledge that we have. We're losing lives because we don't know enough.
Well, right, but is Google the best like organization to do this? Like, I guess is my question. I wonder if Google's
Microsoft.
The right.
Well, okay. So there's an interesting argument here. You remember the Human Genome Project, the project to map the genome. There were public sector scientists working on this, and there were corporate people working on it. And it was the corporate people who solved it very quickly, very much quicker than anybody thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, it opened people's eyes to the fact that this could be done in the private sector.
Right.
And of course, there was some incentive to do map the genome because maybe you could patent it. There is a project that's been going on for considerably longer, the Personal Genome Project. I tried to get in on this. Esther Dyson is one of the people who has donated her data to this. This is from Harvard. So this is a public sector. They've collected, I think, both the genome and the medical information for something like 100 people, or this was the plan. And the whole deal with this, and the reason it was very difficult to, and I've asked to participate and have not been invited, is because you had to be willing to give, I mean, there was no privacy involved. In order for this to work, you had to consent that your name would be, they said, well, you're not going to be able to keep this private. So your name will be known, your phenotype, your genotype, everything will be public. Researchers will have access to it. And there you go. And because you can't keep this private, if you're going to participate, you should understand that.
I was talking to Esther Dyson about this issue once, and I said, well, I suppose, Esther, that if by talking about my prostate cancer, I've revealed something about my son's genome. And he said, oh, Jarvis, get over it. Everybody gets prostate cancer.
It's true eventually. George Church is doing this, and we talked to George on our show Futures in Biotech some years ago, and I tried to get in on this, and I think it's a great thing, and I don't know if... You know, if you sign up, you agree to pay for the tests, which are several thousand dollars. And I wanted to do it because I felt like this would be a contribution.
Yeah, I agree.
But you have to do extensive medical questionnaires because they're trying to match your genotype with your history. It's great. And this is totally for the public good. And I think somewhat similar to what Google's up to.
There was when I went to the privacy event, the all hands at privacy event at Google about 2-3 months ago. And a guy, I think his name is Mikey Dickerson. He's a site reliability engineer at Google. Chat room, maybe know and tell me if I'm getting his name wrong. But he was the guy who went off to rescue Obamacare's technology, along with a few others. But he was the main guy. And he came back and he gave a really, really eloquent, wonderful talk about having a lack of what a lack of knowledge has done through history of health, right? And the classic example is Stephen Johnson's retelling of. Was it typhoid?
The
one well in London.
Tainted water, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tainted water, right? It was knowledge that cured that.
Yes.
It's data that cures that. And keeping that data private, you know, still seeing illness as something to be ashamed of and something to be punished in society so that people do hide it is only going to hurt us. And yes, if you have Ebola, there's a reason that we want to keep you off and keep you separately. And the family, you know, kidnapped that victim. And that's not good for society either. And I understand that there are still always going to be strictures about health information. But in general, more information is good, full stop. You could misuse it about privacy. You could misuse it in bad science. But to choose to have less information is insane on its face. So I think this makes sense of Google. I think who's better to gather and analyze large amounts of data at a consumer level? Now, you know, who's better at it at another level? The NSA, but I don't want them to.
Well, but then there are people who equate the Google with the NSA, just the private sector version of the NSA. All right, this is a good conversation. We could talk so much more about all of this stuff, but I think it's time to play the drums, play the trumpets, play the horns, put Gina Trapani to work, because it's time for the Google changelog.
The Google changelog.
What's new with the Goog? Gina has the latest.
Google Maps got a pretty big update or a new feature on iOS and Android. It's the new Explore feature. I don't know if you've gotten this already on your phone, Leo. Oh. So you launch Google Maps on your phone and there's a brand new button on the bottom right and it's the Explore Nearby button. And you tap that and Google looks at the time of day and the weather and your location and it basically just recommends like what's the nearest best thing kind of nearby. Very similar to Foursquare. Huh. Clearly using Zagat, clearly using your social connections. It'll tell you from your circles who has gone places or rated things. It's pretty nice. So the new feature expands the Google Maps is more than just, you know, kind of a directions app. It'll make suggestions for you and adjust the result based on context.
Do you have it? So it's next to the bullseye that says pinpoint where I am. There's a new button that has a little pin. Mm-hmm. Dropped into a circle, and if I tap that, it says, here's what's near you. Within a 10-minute walk, it says, it's the afternoon, it's 88 degrees. Here's some quick bites, Mary's Pizza Shack. There's some parks. Here's ice cream, tea houses, bakeries. They think I'm a fatso. Where's the nearest gym? Here's some Zagat stuff. This is, I'm glad to see Zagat.
Where did you get that, Liam?
It's on the maps. No,
it's
so
on
I get
Google Maps. It's like it's literally it's a new button right on the interface. It's not
it's
even buried
cool
in the menu.
Now. I thought it also
no maps.
Now. I see.
But it is kind of nowish, isn't it?
It is kind of nowish.
Yeah.
And I was saying on All About Android last night, like it's great. I normally would use Foursquare for this kind of thing, but I went to explore near my office. My office is in kind of a, like an industrial area in Brooklyn, and there's not a lot of lunch options. And it actually found a place that I hadn't heard of before that I wound up
That's
saying,
awesome.
Oh, I'm gonna check this out. So it's pretty good. Lots of images, lots of ratings, and, wow. you know, takes into consideration open and close times. I believe it does not recommend places that are not open at the moment that you're checking. So it's pretty good.
This
I'm
is
impressed
sweet.
With this feature.
You know, my favorite thing that Google does to me now?
What?
On Saturdays, only on Saturdays, in my Google Now, it tells me how long it takes to get to Bridgewater Commons. And the reason is because on Saturdays, I go to Chipotle there. And it knows that I'm going to Chipotle. It says 17 minutes to Bridgewater Commons. Yeah, okay, it's time for burrito. It knows when to do it. It knows when I'm there. Of course, Germans would find that freaky. I don't. I find that amusing.
I was actually thinking, I think I've talked with Mike and Elgin and others about the Android Wear Watch. And if there's a negative to the Android Wear Watch, it doesn't do enough of that.
Enough. I agree.
I want
I agree.
More Google Now, not less Google Now. In fact, that would yeah. be, I mean, I guess you've got a constrained screen, you can't just load it up with stuff. But I really like this new maps feature. I love it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it could be like, oh, I see that you. It looks like you pick up coffee most right. mornings at 9 a.m. at this place. Have you tried this other place down the block? Your friends, you know, Jason and Sarah yeah. like this place or something like that.
Oh, look, we're on it. Like, we're here. We're a popular attraction in the play and see section.
Nice.
Twit LLC.
Sweet.
Yay. Well, there's not that much stuff within 5 minutes, so I guess that's probably.
I like it. Popular attraction. That
Yay.
Seems
have you guys played? Is the new Foursquare out? Because they did the split off of the check-in as a separate
app. Yeah, Swarm. I use Swarm, which is the check-in part.
The check-in mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
Is the new core Foursquare out yet?
I don't think Without so. I haven't gotten the update.
Okay. So they're going to redo that at the same time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be
mm-hmm.
curious to know. That's where Foursquare and Google are going to compete again.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Google, I mean, they own Zagat. I mean, they have Google Places, so they have all those businesses. Seems like
they know where you go. I mean, to me, the huge trove of data that's just waiting is they know what restaurants we go to.
Right.
They know how many people of what type go to what restaurants. I mean, American Express knows that too, but in a way they can't really use the data.
Google's been fairly judicious. They obviously don't want to go too far down that.
I mean, Google also knows, gee, Mr. Laporte stopped for 12 minutes at this address.
Yeah.
That's a gas station. Everybody seems to be going to that gas station. Wonder what the price is. I mean, you can, there's more data to play with there that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That.
So you're talking about the passive tracking of your phone's location. So Leo's not checking in at that gas station.
No, exactly.
Right?
It just knows where I am. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is what Foursquare tried. Dennis Crowley tried to get to by having people sign up for the app and just do it, but he was still stuck with the check-in motif and wants to break out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So explore there in maps. You're right. Now it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about Google Now, but I guess Google Now does do that, right? Like you don't necessarily check in at Chipotle every Saturday, but Google Now says, hey, it's Saturday. Are you headed to this place?
So
they're starting to do that.
Habit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What else do we have? Oh, Google Voice. Google Voice is now offering web-based calls through Hangouts. No Google Plus profile needed. So this is a little bit of a minor new feature, but if you use Google Voice, it might come in handy. So now this means just Google Voice on the web. If you go to Google Voice on the web, if you search for a user and you click on the call button, you can choose which phone to call for that contact. And under that choice, Hangouts is now a new option. So you can call the person through Hangouts and you don't have to have a Google Plus profile set up in order to use that. So a little tiny minor move toward integrating voice and Hangouts. I want to see more of that. I want to see voice and Hangouts merge completely at some point. Gmail for iOS is getting the update that Android's had, I believe, for a while now. Not for a while, but a few weeks. Gmail for iOS just got insert from Drive and save to Drive. That update released this past week. And just like with Gmail on the web, that means that iOS users can now insert files directly from Google Drive into emails and save attachments from emails into Google Drive. When you, if the recipient of the email that you're sending doesn't have access to the Google Drive document you can send them, Gmail for iOS will inform you, and then you can change the sharing settings settings before sending it. And that update is rolling out now. I think it came out this week. Google Translate has added crowdsourcing features to improve its translations. I gotta say, I mean, crowdsourcing worked really well in a lot of situations. Translations particularly well. So Google established the Google Translate community, which is open now, open to everyone. So that gives users who speak more than one language fluently the option to offer their own translations and validate current translations. So if you are bilingual or multilingual, you should go to translate.google.com/community. You can tell Google what languages you speak. And then if you click on the Get Started button, Google will just show you a phrase and say, you know, here's a phrase in English. How would you translate this in another language? And the more people who do this, the better translations we'll get. I think that Google will also show you current translations that it has and let you correct them or update them.
Is that an acknowledgement that machine translation just is never going to get as good as human?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because given Google's, you know, inclinations, they probably would like the machine to do it all.
Yeah. Even with Android apps, when I localize my app into a few different languages, it just, there's so many, there's just things that are, you know, there are different translations and you want a human looking at them. And even Google, you know, they'd added into the developer console for Android apps that you could basically sign up for a service that had actual humans reviewing your translation. So they've conceded that machine translations don't work.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. Well, we've all known that, but
we've known that, yeah. Right? Anyone, language is just a little too hard.
It's odd.
Finally, Chrome beta for Android, which is actually my default browser, and it's been great for me, so I recommend it. Got the material design makeover, or a material design makeover. Ars Technica has a nice rundown of the changes. You know, it just, the changes are subtle, but also, you know, very, very nice, just kind of open, flatter, wider, just much more sort of material designy than you think. A little simplicity, fewer lines, more space. The logo got a little bit punching up, a little more colorful. A couple of things are broken because it is a beta. I think the number doesn't show up on your tabs button anymore. They've combined the address bar on the search bar in some contexts. Incognito mode, the new tab is completely black and has got a new icon, which is really kind of neat. So really nice update there. I've been running the Chrome beta. Like I said, it's my default browser, and I really like it. I like it a lot. So material design, the material design makeover for Chrome, for Chrome hasn't been completed yet. I think it's still a work in progress, but it's kind of neat to see material design rolling out to Chrome and to the Play Store and to the kind of proprietary Google apps before Android L drops. And that's all I got.
And that's the Google change log. Boy, it's really depressing when you go to volunteer to help with Google Translate and it says, select the languages you know.
and you're like, oh.
None of those.
Such a terrible American.
Oh, we're terrible. Look at all the languages I could know.
I had
don't.
To fake it, say Italian, even though that is totally not true.
Speak fluently. Speak fluently. Wouldn't you like to be one of those people, you know, has, but it won't let me check more than five. why limit me? I can speak so many languages fluently.
Is Klingon listed there?
Yeah, probably. Let me see. That's a good question. No, they're not looking for Klingon translations. Sorry. Did they? They also had like Leet speak, but none of those in here. These are actual languages. Cherokee. That's interesting. Chichewa. Igbo. Telugu. No, I'm just saying nonsense words.
There's a lot of languages.
There's a lot of languages.
A lot of languages.
Right to be forgotten. Let's give Jeff a chance once again. there's so many. I don't even know what to say. 50% now.
Stupider
and stupider.
The new frontier is Spain.
What's going on in Spain?
Spain has passed a law that requires payment to link.
What?
It's called the Google tax, and it's a required payment to link, and then they're going to give the money to big old media companies to save them. It is just beyond. It even goes beyond the rest of Europe.
So what is Google going to do? I mean, they're not going to pay people to put links in Google search results.
Of course not. And I think it was as Boing Boing that pointed out that even if you're a small blogger, you can't opt out because it's now considered like a human right in the bill. I don't think it's gone all the way through. Ridiculously stupid. And now I understand why Google wants me to come over and speak. And full disclosure, they pay for my airfare because I'm not going to lose money on this, but they don't pay me at a Big Ten event in Madrid. And now I know why they want me to come to Madrid.
Good, yeah.
Idiots!
How do you say idiot in Spanish?
Yeah, how do you? Chat room? If we were fluent in five languages, we'd know. So there's that, but there's a ray of hope this week. The Lords, the House of Lords in the UK has said that Right to Be Forgotten is undoable and stupid.
Good, good. The Lords know. Yeah, it's the Commons.
The Google Advisory Committee is going to hold a bunch of basically public hearings, and they've invited people to send them their views. It's as if the advisory committee is kind of a faux FCC now on this.
I think they should have open hearings. They should let you watch the sausage being made, and then it would become very obvious very quickly how untenable this is. 50% of all the requests, over 100,000 links from 91,000 people have been granted so far.
And there's a list of questions that Google and Bing and Yahoo were called on the carpet, Shea Woodshed, about their implementation, because they weren't happy that Google was notifying the delinked that they've been delinked, because media would just write stories about that. So there's this list of questions of what they demanded of them, and it's just, again, it continues the tremendous idiocy of this.
What information do you request from a data subject prior to considering a deleting request? Do you filter out some requests based on the location, nationality, or place of residence? Do you delete
the
results?
Data subject. It makes it sound like serfs.
Ugh. What explanation do you provide to data subjects when you refuse to delist?
Well, we decided not to.
This is God. So
hyperlink.
I guess it's a jobs project for the EU. Like, Google's gonna have to hire thousands of people for this.
But in both places, it is a war against the link, and the link is the fundamental architecture of the web.
Yeah. No, it's a war against the web. It is.
The link is subversive, and government has finally figured that out, and they're trying to subvert the subversion of the link.
Yep.
And let's hope they fail, folks.
Google has made another big acquisition, according to sources, VentureBeat and others reporting. Google has paid $1 billion to buy Twitch.tv, the Justin.tv spinoff that allows you to watch live game streaming. Sources familiar with the matter told Dean Takahashi, $1 billion.
$1 billion.
$1 billion. And you know what? I don't think anybody's saying it's not worth it. That's certainly the number one thing to watch on YouTube right now is gameplay, right? PewDiePie and others, people love it. I watch Michael. He's 11 years old. That's pretty much all the television he watches is YouTube videos of gameplay. That's it. It's big money here. This is the future. Both Google and Twitch didn't decline in comment at this point. They bought YouTube for $1.65 billion. So... Wow.
$1 billion.
Twitch has 50 million. It's not that big. 50 million monthly active users. More than a million who broadcast members who broadcast videos each month. But that's big growth. They've grown considerably over the last couple of years. They also distribute shows from people like CBS Interactive's GameSpot, Joystick, and Destructoid, which are gaming news sites. 13 billion minutes of video are watched every month on Twitch.
I said it last time we talked about this. I don't get it.
Well, you're old.
I'm old.
Yeah,
I'm old.
You're old. This just makes me feel old.
We interviewed on Triangulation this week on Monday the first really successful professional gamer, Dennis Fong. His handle was Thresh in '97. He won the tournament to be the best Quake player in the world, got a John Carmack's red Ferrari as a prize. He pointed out that now these tournaments have prize purses in the millions, tens of millions. And these tournaments really make their money by broadcasting the gameplay of the tournament, you know, and then having big events and so forth. So the, what was it, League of Legends tournament? What was the tournament that did?
Yeah, League of Legends by Riot Games.
Yeah. So it's pretty impressive, I have to say. It's become big business, but it's not for you and me.
No. I mean, I guess I should celebrate that entertainment becomes interactive and people are more involved.
You should watch. Some of these are very exciting. Some of these videos are very exciting.
I can't play them in the first place. I'm not a game player at all.
Well, that's why you don't need a computer.
No, but you can watch Twitch on your Chrome OS.
You can.
Yeah, you can.
You do need to have some context, right? Like, it's only exciting if you have some context. Like, what's this game about? What's the point?
You want to watch some Twitch video right now?
Just give us...
was it this show or was it Twit that we showed the Pokemon Red victory?
We did on this show.
That was on this show. So you've already seen some.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not really all that much about the game. It's about who's
the personalities of the people who are commenting.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Like, well, it's a mix. I mean, Michael watches a lot of these to learn techniques and stuff.
Like right now, I think... What time is it? No, he stopped. There's a few streamers that I tune into just to watch their streams.
Because of what they say, because they're funny.
Right. They're great people to hang out.
So this is good. 1,000 people are watching this guy playing. You saying I shouldn't do this?
Well, no, fine.
Because there's usually profanity, right?
Absolutely. And then also you went into an area that is probably the least appropriate.
So this is a kid. Now look at what he's doing. He's on a green screen, I would guess. And there's him. And in the background is his screen, so this is a fairly sophisticated setup. Where should I go? Games channels, right?
No, games is perfect. Okay. And then they are rated by most viewed. So right now, League of Legends is on top.
Yeah, it's boring to watch League of Legends.
Sure, absolutely. So go watch Minecraft.
All right, Minecraft. That's fascinating.
Right, it's number six. who's up there on the top?
Mad Pack has got the John Bams Wild D Field Mark. Beast Machine 911, Chaos Chunk, Quetzal. Any of those ring a bell?
No, none of these guys.
Look, this guy's got 1,500 viewers.
Very weird time.
Oh, this is for mature audiences.
Yeah, so they'll let you know that too.
Yeah. I'm surprised people are playing Plague Inc. on here. That's not exactly an action game. We're going to start watching. I might warn you, there may be fleeting expletives. So this game is not exactly... This is a tablet-based game.
Plague is now a PC game.
Yeah, you can play it on any platform, but it really came out of tablet, and it's really a touch game where you're trying to conquer the world with your plague. So you design your plague, adding capabilities as you go. It's not exactly, as you can see, an action game. So you're saying it's this guy?
That's
that
the
makes
thing.
It
is, yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, and in order for these people, like, you know,
I feel like I missed a bet.
There's a guy
like,
named Bacon Donut, and every night he has 7,000 people, you know, tuning in to watch his stream.
Well,
where
now,
he plays
if I
games.
Search for Bacon Donut, can I watch one of his videos?
Yeah, he probably has stuff archived.
All right, making bacon donuts.
Bacon donuts.
Or Sevenus, you know, is another big guy.
See, Chad knows all about this because he's under 30.
And that's he streams key, 7 right? days a week, you know, for 4 hours,
does he make
5
money
hours.
On this?
Absolutely.
Bacon Donut is the tastiest. How does he make money on this?
Yeah, how does he make money?
Donations are a big ploy.
So
what
people give him money.
Yeah, and so what they'll do is they'll have a ticker that shows the latest donations, the top donation of the night, the top donation of the week.
I bet you Michael's watching Bacon Donut. So
yeah, there's Bacon Donut.
He looks like a Bacon Donut. So he's
doing like a podium.
He's on a green screen.
Yeah. Some people choose green screen. Some people choose face cam box.
Right. I like the green screen. You really look like you're, although right. Putting your head in the lower, I mean, well, anyway, so let's hear it. Let's listen. What's going on?
You have it muted. So we can't.
I have it muted.
Yeah.
Well, let's unmute it. Let's listen to all the Twitch glory.
What's the record? Our record is 2 hours and 30 minutes. Right now, it's about 1 hour and 8 minutes. We're hoping that
he's doing a speed run
and we'll increase it by an hour.
So he's got somebody narrating because he's obviously busy.
bacon. I was just taking tall.
I love he's actually in a call with someone. That's not bacon.
Oh, that's not bacon donut? One of the things that I find less interesting in this is the expression on people's faces when they're playing video games is pretty much that of an unconscious zombie. There's no affect. There's no smiling. There's no laughing. They don't look like they're having fun.
It's true.
That's true.
Dragon plates.
So it's completely different.
And so you can see at the top of his video, you know, top this month, top today, most recent.
There you go. He's laughing now.
I was about to say that I hope my surgeon has this much concentration, but of course, after you die, he laughs. Well, I take it back.
Anyway, there you go. That's an example. And he's making a living doing this.
Yes.
I also, like, I just feel a little...
Oh, it's $5 to subscribe.
Someone else. Like, control a first person. Like, watching someone else game is, like, I don't know.
It's even more passive than playing.
Yeah, but no, I mean, like, the movement of the camera, it's just very...
it makes you queasy.
It's disorienting, like...
Well, we're just old. We're all too old for this.
Clearly.
I missed a bet. I really think I could have done a good job of this had I been a little younger. I think I'm funnier than a lot of these guys. I could have done a good narration as I play the game. I blew it. I could be making millions now instead of sitting here talking about Google.
on your table with lines in it.
Yeah, I got to get a new table. And can I afford it? No, bacon pancakes is taking all the air out of the room. Google offering 3 months of free unlimited music to celebrate 1 year of Chromecast. You got to buy a Chromecast to get it. Chromecast has been now used 400 million times to cast sessions to TVs. Are they... Are they counting?
I guess so.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of
they
definitely
are.
Stat.
That doesn't, it seems like that's a small number, 400 million.
400 million casts. And they sold how many? A million Chromecasts?
Okay.
400 per device.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Services like YouTube. Let's see. People are Chromecasting. All they say is they've sold millions in 20 countries.
Oh, they've sold millions. I'm sorry. So it's not 1 million. Is. Okay.
I don't know what millions means. It could be anywhere from 1 to 9.
Yeah, right. So even if it's 2 million or 3 million.
It's probably in that ballpark.
We're talking about 200 casts per device. That's good. That's active use. Yeah.
That is active use. And I would say most people who have a Chromecast use it fairly actively, yeah?
When I finally got a smart TV and where I watch TV most of the time, I don't use my Chromecast.
You stopped using it.
Yeah, pretty much, because I'm Netflix or whatever.
Do we care that the judges of the FISA court's rotated in and out. The judges come from a pool, but that some of these judges own Verizon stock. Do we care about that? Is that a big story?
It's fun to be able to find any fault we can with this whole system, but the truth is it's not like Verizon makes money hand over fist from FISA decision.
FISA court judge Susan Wright purchased Verizon stock valued at, unfortunately, we don't know the amount, $15,000 or less on October 22nd. Dennis Saylor owned Verizon stock, got a dividend of less than $1,000. Government disclosures don't include hard amounts. So, you know, you've said many times you own, a handful of shares of Google. I don't think that, I don't know. I mean, normally a judge will recuse himself or herself if it's ruling on a case that he has a financial interest in. So if he owns stock, he should recuse himself on a case that involves Verizon, I guess. I don't know. Problem is, all of this is so secret. You just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a Nexus 6, a Nexus phablet? Sources say Google and Motorola are working on something. Android Police.
Of course, just as soon as I buy the OnePlus One, of course, there's a new phone.
But it's a phablet.
5.9 inches is a little bit bigger. The information Jessica Lessen's story corroborates. The earlier report provides additional detail.
I wonder whether doing a Nexus phone on Motorola was a condition of sale to Lenovo.
Oh, interesting.
Just speculation.
Might be. Who would make that condition, Google or Lenovo?
I think it's good for Lenovo.
It's good for Lenovo. It gives them something to sell.
Yeah.
The code name is Shamu, as you know, a killer whale. So it would make sense. It would be a large device. I'm waiting for the new Motorola, whatever they're going to call it, that they registered a trademark for a Motorola Max. They already have the Droid Max. Oh, the Moto Max.
The X successor or the Moto X plus one? Or
That's what I'm wondering. That's the one I'm very interested in. We haven't heard a thing. Motorola has trademarked Moto, M-O-T-O, M-A-X-X. They already have Max for the Droid. I guess they don't have a Moto. All right. We have now gone through every story that seems of
old. Yeah, we made a show out of it. There wasn't much news. You're right.
Should we talk real quick about the Twitter hashtag, well, Twitter's announcement, and then the Ask Costolo to hashtag getting taken over a little bit yesterday?
So Twitter interesting. Stock went up 30%. They beat their street on their Q2 user growth revenue, and they even turned a profit. Congratulations, Twitter, in their most recent quarter. And so what, Evan did a Q&A?
Yeah, Dick Costolo does a Q&A on CNBC, and CNBC says, okay, you know, hashtag your questions for the CEO of Twitter with Ask Costolo, which is his, you know, instead of Ask Dick, Ask Costolo.
Probably and, better, yeah.
a tremendous number of users, particularly in sort of my community and the sort of the folks who rail against harassment and abuse on social networks, particularly around gender and race and ableism and all that stuff, really kind of took over the hashtag, demanding to know, like, what is Twitter going to do about abuse and harassment? Because, you know, look, the truth is it's very easy to report spam on Twitter, and spammers get dealt with pretty quickly. But when you're being called names, when you're being threatened and abused or whatever, often there's no response or, you know, very small response or a response that's 2 months later. So it was interesting. It was very interesting to watch the whole thing go down. I was a bunch of people who I follow were participating in the hashtag and then retweeting questions that people were posting. And I actually participated in the hashtag. I don't do that very often.
What did you ask?
I just said that I hoped that he was listening to those questions. I knew CNBC wasn't going to pose those questions to him, right?
And so people asked, does Twitter cull violent accounts? Does Twitter, how many times do you have to report an account that exists solely for smearing people? I get abused mercilessly on Twitter. I just block the account so I don't ever see it, which seems to me fine. I don't, you know, my Twitter stream for a long time, I just didn't want to even look at it because it was so negative. So I just realized, well, I could just block those people, and I just block them, and I don't see them.
But you know, someone like Adria Richards, for example, when that whole thing went down, I mean, she was actively, you know, threatened and abused. I mean, to there was a huge spike in activity for that kind of thing, and you do feel helpless. And when I defended her, I got crazy. I mean, I get a sort of low level of harassment always. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Leo,
absolutely.
Just because you don't see it and it's going on about you, that's not a lot of fun to just have this unimagined.
I don't know. I'm completely in the dark about it. Unless somebody comes to me and says it's going on, I don't see it. Maybe you guys see it. You probably do see it. But I don't.
No.
It doesn't bother me. And frankly, it seems like I'm sure. Well, I don't. You know, of course. And there's a good article, a blog post. About the least Twitter could do, Danilo Campos writing about some of the things that Twitter could do. For instance, block users who account. You should have a block all users.
Or allow users to block all
users whose accounts are less than 30 days old. Because the problem with this, and I can understand Twitter's position, it's the same thing as saying to Yahoo, hey, you got to stop spam. Well, good luck. Is it's easy to create a Twitter account. People do it all the time, and they do it particularly to harass. So I guess giving us better tools, and then just create new ones. So Danilo is saying, give us tools to block users whose accounts are brand new, block users whose follow counts are less than a threshold. A lot of the accounts attack me have, you know, 10 followers, and they were created last month. Block new users whose at replies include any words the user decides. So you could say, hey, if they say, you know, screw Leo Laporte, well, I don't want to see that. Block any user who's been blocked by more than a certain number of people I'm following. You know, it works pretty well for me just to go into my feed, and whenever somebody says something I find trollish, I just block them, and I never see them again. And it's really made my Twitter feed a lot more pleasant.
Right, right. But if you have a concentrated attack, you know, if the I don't know, you know, if some Reddit board decides to attack a particular user, what could Twitter do?
I mean, how could Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of these suggestions that he made are pretty good. I think it's, you know, this gets into free speech issues of free speech and what could they possibly do? And is it Twitter's job to police what people can say on their service? But it does sort of get down to that, you know. If and this was the same question, what happened with Reddit, with the troll who was posting, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. was, you know, posting photos of young women in bikinis or whatever. I forget, Violent Acres, the Violent Acres story. And it kind of came down to this thing where it's like, we're a platform and does the telephone company moderate what people say on the phone and this whole question. And I mean, I sort of land on the side of, you know, Twitter has built spam filters, right? Like these, and so has Reddit. Like these platforms for communication have built algorithmic ways to deal with spam in order to improve the user experience. And I think dealing, you know, creating algorithms or offering users more control, like some of these controls that Dino proposed, is a way that they can also improve the user experience. But they typically don't, because these are usually folks that get threatened and harassed on Twitter are disempowered groups of folks and people. Right. You know, they're people of color, they're women. They're not, you know, privileged folks with lots of free time and lots of money and lots of power who don't feel threatened by someone photoshopping an image of them.
Right.
You know. So anyway, I thought it was interesting.
It goes to the right to be forgotten question too. Mm-hmm. Because
it does. You know,
Google
does
kill off certain things and I'm objecting greatly to the right to be forgotten. Some people say to me, well, hold on, Jarvis, you know, they kill certain stuff. And if you go back to Brandeis and Warren and their groundbreaking essay on privacy in the U.S., it came down to a right to be let alone. Mm-hmm. And that was their definition of privacy in the end. And so it's part of what you're saying, really, is in a sense that if you're not well known, if you're not trying to be out there, if you're not trying anything, and people are just coming after you, do you have a right to be let alone? And mm-hmm. it sounds right that we should, but then again, you know, you have to get pretty far down the road on harassment in real life to get an injunction slapped against you.
Gina, would it be sufficient for you if Twitter provided some of these tools that Danilo's suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are some ways to give users control. I mean, I've certainly been in situations where my mentions column not only made me feel, you know, sort of upset as being called names and whatever, but made me feel like helpless because I felt like I can block this person. They can continue to say things about me that I will no longer see, but will still be out there. Like, is it my job to sort of monitor whether or not these people are going to show up at my house or you know, what?
Right.
You know, but it's that feeling of helplessness. I think that if the platform is built well, you want to give users a feeling of control. So, yeah, I think that some of these controls are good suggestions.
The best control that they could do is make it so you don't see it. That does not respond to your issue of, should I pay attention to what they're saying in case they're actually going to commit an act of violence? You have to read those to do that. So I think in that case, what do you do? Does Twitter have to?
Well, I'd want faster responses from Twitter to say
they should ban speech. If it's abusive speech, they should ban that person.
Yeah, and I mean, and they have to make those decisions every day.
That person can instantly create a new account. I mean, it takes no time.
Right. That's right. That's right. But it feels like there are ways that, you know, programmatically and with a little human intervention that you could detect those kinds of things.
Block somebody's IP address.
Yeah, I mean, you could detect if it's coming from the same IP address. You could detect to see, you know.
I mean, we do that in the chat room. We actually do that in the chat room. We mm-hmm. enforce those rules.
Well, you know, Leo, I think part of the issue though is that, you know, somebody. I'm not gonna give this person a moment's attention. So, please allow me to be very generic. Someone wrote a really nasty piece about me some time ago. Somebody wrote really nasty one. You know about a long time ago, but a little more recently, and I could tell what it was going to be a paragraph in, and I just. I'm not reading it.
Right.
And I saw a couple of people tweet about it at the time and I just, you know, ignored it. And I'm not going to give the person the slightest satisfaction that they,
What else can you do?
Yeah, I didn't see it. And so to some level, you know, and I haven't had anything that women have, but I've had a few nut jobs come after me. And at some point, if they get absolutely no satisfaction from if they know that you are not seeing what they're saying, it takes away some of
Well, I'll give you an example. Some of the people who are tweeting against me are tweeting that to sponsors. Now what do we do?
Right.
Right.
And it concerns the sponsors. The sponsors don't understand. I mean, we tell the sponsors, they're just trolls. Don't worry about it.
But that concerns them. Trolls and celebrity, yeah.
That concerns them. So that's an economic. Violence is a whole different thing and much, much worse, obviously. I don't know what you do.
But there's also, like, I think the three of us have been public figures to some extent, you know, for a long time. I mean, Lifehacker, my first 2 months at Lifehacker, I was, like, getting thrown in the boiling water of being just exposed to so many people. I mean, I was shell-shocked. I had just never had such a big audience, and I had never been criticized so and nitpicked and just discussed so publicly before. And it's very jarring if you've never had that situation before. And now I feel like I have a much thicker skin. I'm much more likely to just brush off somebody who, you know. But in the beginning, and for someone who's not used to it, and I think that this is happening to people who, you know, don't, you know, have a couple hundred followers, and this is the first time they've really had any sort of public persona, or they're gaining some sort of following for whatever reason. I think it's genuinely frightening, and I don't think the solution is, hey, just don't pay attention, don't worry about it, you know, because I think the moment you feel really alone and you think, what have I shared online, what can somebody find out about me if they're really dedicated to making my life miserable, and you start to reevaluate and feel unsafe and disempowered and helpless, and you know, it spirals. I think it's a hard experience for noobs, and I think for us it's easy to say, all right, this is just another internet crazy.
It's all true, but I don't think the solution is an algorithm that's going to cut it out, because you're right to be forgotten, right to be let alone. You're going to, I want, you know, wait for the next law to come out of Europe to say that people have the right to kill people who are being abusive, kill comments by people who are being abusive to them, and we're back into the same discussion about freedom of speech.
There is at least one of my trolls is mentally ill. I mean,
that's
diagnosable. So, yeah. And perhaps could be dangerous. Who knows?
Yes.
But so the process exists, and I've done this before, where you get you go to the Twitter, you actually go to your police, and if they think that that's reasonable, that you should be in fear of, you know, for your personal safety, they get a subpoena, they go to Twitter. Twitter won't give you this without a subpoena, but Twitter will give it to you with a subpoena. They give you the IP address of the person. Then you have to get another subpoena, go to that person's internet service provider. We have done this. And track that person down. And then the local police in that jurisdiction go to that person's house. That's all you can do. What is Twitter supposed to do in that? Would you want a Twitter that just says, whenever I ask, oh, yeah, I'll give you that person's IP address? No, they should.
There's a few things that you can do.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, there's a range here, right? Take for a moment the person who needs their meds out of this, because...
Yeah, these
nothing can fix them. You know, believe me,
I am sympathetic to mental illness. Mental illness is a disease.
Literally, they need their meds.
They're in trouble, and I feel for them.
But for the people who just troll for the sake of trolling, the sake of getting at you, what we need is for society's norms to mean that people pile up in defense of you and deal with it and reject.
Is that
people.
The right?
There's
thing
There's a horrible
do,
show on ABC. I think it is. The, you know, what would you do show? You know, they'll have a guy, a sleazy guy, picking up on some girl who's alone in a cafe.
I hate that
And they
stuff.
Wait for some. I hate the show. I hate the show, hate because it stuff. Tries to make people look bad.
Right.
But some brave grandma will go and defend him and say, get away from her and come here, honey. And then it shows that there's still decent people on Earth. But there are. And why won't a sleazy guy go in any cafe and just, you know, hit on any 15-year-old girl? Because there are norms, and somebody will stand up and somebody will do something at some point. And we have to be in a society with to figure out ways where that happens.
The problem is, it's true in a cafe that works. It doesn't work on Twitter. It's the opposite on Twitter. It encourages them.
Twitter can offer tools that would make that happen. So, for example, Leo, if I see somebody abusing you and calling you, you know, making threats toward you, I can't report that person for abusing you. You have to report that person, right?
So
and that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't we all be able to look out for one another?
Good point.
Why shouldn't I be able to see, 10 of my friends have blocked this guy?
Right. Right.
Because that, you know, that would make me feel less alone. I mean, it just feels like, you know, when I was a little kid and I was getting bullied, my sister marched around the corner and told the girl she'd punch her in the face. Like, this is how it works sort of in life. And I feel like Twitter could provide more tools to help users feel more empowered. I felt like the point of the hashtag yesterday is that a lot of users, Twitter users, and the majority of Twitter users are people of color. And at least I would guess about half are women, right? Feel disempowered and feel helpless and feel like their reports don't get any sort of response, and don't feel like they have the tools that they need to deal with them.
It's my guess that Dick is pretty sympathetic to this, and I would expect him, to the degree that he can, that he would respond to this, right? Or do you?
He is. He said that he was in a meeting with his abuse team today after this whole thing happened yesterday.
I feel like he's a good guy. Yeah. I don't feel like he's evil in any way.
I don't either. I don't either. It's interesting though that this that the earnings report was what spurred this the hashtag takeover. I found it really interesting.
Well, in a way, he was a victim of Twitter's malleability, flexibility, right?
Yeah, I guess the Dick bar was pretty bad as well, right? That was also the hashtag movement, right, against the Twitter thing.
You gotta think Dick Costolo, the CEO of Twitter, gets more of this than anybody, right? Don't you think he gets a lot of abuse?
He can afford security. He can afford security.
All right. This is the only show that we talk about this stuff on, and it's a good conversation.
Thank you for indulging me on that one.
I think it's very important.
It's really good points, Gina.
As always with this show, we talk about the bigger philosophical issues, the bigger issues that, you know, we are faced with in this new world of ours. But now would be a good time to get to the back of the book, the tip. The number and the tool of the week. So let's start with your tip, Gina.
So you can now ask Google now for directions to my hotel.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So if you got hotel reservations stored in your Gmail account, Google now knows about it. And you can say, show me restaurants near my hotel, or get me directions to my hotel from here. And Google now will automatically map the phrase my hotel to the hotel where you're staying. Pretty neat. So it's kind of an extension of, you know, get me directions to work or get me directions to home. And it's just now a temporary, a location if you're staying in a hotel. Pretty smart.
Yeah. My hotel.
My hotel.
Do you have to have a confirmation from that hotel in your email or something like that?
Yep.
That's how it knows.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Jeff, you have, as usual, many numbers. Pick as many as you want. Yeah,
I'll go over this one.
Okay.
So after the stock went up this week on Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, you might have seen, is now worth more than the Google founders.
Wow.
Not that that's terribly meaningful, but what the heck. So it's $33.3 billion, ranking him at number 16. The Google founders are 17 and 18. Bezos is 20.
Wow. Bill Gates used to be the richest man with a mere $32 billion.
Yeah. So wait, who's number one then?
Afraid you're going to ask me that, Gina.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
This is the...
I don't deal in number six or seven, Jeff. I want to know
who's number one. Who's number one?
Oh, this is okay. This is just the tech guy.
Probably Warren Buffett or something.
Yeah, probably. All right.
Bill Gates is still the richest man in the world. $84.7 billion.
Jesus.
Wow. That's with him giving it away.
Yeah.
His net worth has grown 8% this year. But it's not just Microsoft. He also has significant investments in the Canadian National Railway Company and Republic Services. I don't know what they do. $400 million in dividends alone this year. Number two, Carlos Slim, the Mexican telecommunications tycoon with the best name in the world. Carlos Slim.
A lot of New York Times stock.
Carlos Slim sounds like he's a poker player. He has $78.8 billion. Oh, yes. So Bill Gates still the richest man in the world. So you see inflation. That's all that is. Boy, just give me $1 billion. Just $1 billion.
Just one. That's all you want.
Comfortably.
You're greedy. I'll do the $100 million.
I'll go $100 million. I'm not.
All right. Each of us gets $100 million.
All right, perfect. It's only $300 million.
That's just $300 million. That's nothing.
That's it.
Now we got to convince somebody to give it to us.
Nothing. And my tool is, I think it's pretty obvious. So it's a great story because you cannot get the OnePlus One phone, at least not at its face value, which is a remarkable $300 for the 16 gig, $350 for the 64 gig. Top of the line, they call it a flagship killer, and it is, you know, with a Qualcomm 801 quad-core Snapdragon with a great camera. You saw probably Jason's review on Before You Buy or yesterday on All About Android. He's been using this phone. So, but we've been trying like the Dickens because you have to either play a contest. I entered all the contests I could, and I wasn't going to destroy my phone on video, but I did everything else and asked for invitations, and we never got. Finally, one of our viewers very kindly.
Did you get the same person I did?
I don't know.
No, I think they were different.
Offered us a phone. And so we said yes. And Jason bought it, reviewed it. Well, I bought it. Jason reviewed it. And Jason very kindly has let me take it from him.
Yeah, yeah. Poor Jason gets Google Glass and you get the OnePlus. Not fair.
Hey. Well, maybe I'll give it back when the Moto X Plus One comes out or whatever. But
I want to give a shout out to Ryan Suzuki who tweeted publicly.
Is that how you got one? Is that how you got it?
Yeah, and then he offered Gina one too, but Gina had already gotten a Kind Viewer.
So thank you to all three of our benefactors. But yes, what the hell is going on with OnePlus? Why are they making it so hard to get this phone?
I mean, if it's a marketing stunt, it's working.
Yeah, but at this point, you want to say, okay, now we've got a million of them.
Right.
Maybe they don't.
Well, there's some, I think, I'm calling shenanigans.
Yeah, I think it's marketing.
They
said in their shipping email that, like, they're a startup and they're still refining their processes and to be patient. Like, and it took them a couple of days, like several days to process my order, just to process the order. So I don't know.
Here's what I think. I think they're selling it below cost. I think there's no way this costs $350.
Yes.
It is definitely marketing, but it is not marketing for OnePlus. OnePlus was founded by two people who I think may even still work for a company called Oppo.
Oppo.
OnePlus, OnePlus. And Oppo makes a phone that is virtually identical. That's virtually identical called the Find 7. And it costs a little bit more. It costs what it should cost, around $700, right? This is currently not available yet either in the United States.
Oh, and the websites look so similar, by the way.
So here's what I think. I think this is in fact, in some ways, the Find is even better. It's got a higher res display, et cetera. This is they're selling it at a loss, so they don't want to sell too many. It is a marketing ploy, but not for this phone. It's a marketing ploy for Oppo and the Find. That's my...
Interesting.
Whoops.
Interesting. Oh, you turned on the light.
Jason complained about that.
The V.
It's too easy to do because it does these gestures. A V turns on the light. Because I can't figure... Otherwise, I can't figure this out.
I'm convinced. Now that I saw the UI on the website is basically exactly the same, I think you might be right there.
I think Oppo very cleverly said, okay, we're going to create this dummy company, fund it, build this phone that is essentially the same as the Find 7A.
We're going to ship Cyanogen, and we're going to do invites, and we're going to get the most influential and dedicated Android power users.
Yep. And by the way, the Find also runs Cyanogen.
Oh, the Find does run Cyanogen. Okay.
And I think what they've done is that they're selling this. We got this at half the actual cost. Although I saw was it iSupply? One of the companies said they should cost them around $200 to build. So maybe they are making some money on it. I'm not sure.
Find unlocked in the whole deal? I mean, maybe this is their Play Edition. This is their Nexus. This is the developer enthusiast phone.
I think Oppo, and that's the other thing, is you can get the older Find. You can't get the new one that's really close to this. You can get the N1, the Find 5, but this new Find 7 is just about to come out. I think this is all a marketing ploy for the Find 7. And that they're selling it. The reason they don't want a lot of people to buy it is because it costs them. That's my guess. Otherwise, why do it? I mean, at some point, you got to pull the plug. You know, you got to end the marketing and give and make millions.
Yeah.
I don't know. The OnePlus One is slightly larger, a millimeter wider. It's thinner and lighter than the Find, but I think functionally it's pretty similar. I don't know. I can't figure it out. You tell me. But if you can get an invite Now, there are companies selling these at a premium. Expansys US has it for $500, $200 markup.
And the Fine 7A in Germany, and they quote it in US dollars, is $500.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just curious. I just don't understand it. Anyway, curious. But it is my tool of the week. This is I am really impressed with this phone, and it feels good. It's 5.5-inch screen. The other one that you probably would want to look at is the G3 if you want to get a big screen phone. But I'll be curious. So you're both getting OnePluses.
I was going to say, with the exception of one of the Nexuses, this might be the first time that the three hosts of Twig have settled the same phone as our daily, everyday phone. That's saying something.
Yeah.
We get hook, line, and sinker, man.
I'm just pissed I got to change the SIM. That just bothers me. They also want to be able to go back and forth.
It is not a nano SIM. It is a micro SIM.
And every time I change the SIM, something goes wrong with my unlimited data account.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh, that's not good. You're going to have a Comcast day, too. Yeah. Well, apparently there's an adapter. You can snap a nano SIM into a micro SIM adapter.
Well, and so because when I use my SIM cutter, I save the frame, so if I can only find that. But, yeah, it's just a little bit that goes around it.
Maybe you want to try that.
Yeah, it pops into it, and then it's a full size.
Every time I go to T-Mobile, they're like, how did you get this plan? And I'm just like, don't change anything. Just give me a new SIM. Just don't change anything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes a very fine This Week in Google. I was nice. We had just a little time to sit back, relax, talk philosophy. And I like that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here, Gina Trapani. You'll find her at Lifehacker. smarterware.org, but mostly at ThinkUp.
ThinkUp, yeah.
If I go to Leo, I haven't looked at my insights this week. LeoLaporte.thinkup.com.
We launched a free trial, actually, I think, since the last time we talked. Yep. You can try ThinkUp out now for free. You just go to ThinkUp.com, you sign in with your Twitter or Facebook, you get totally free all the features 14 days. Yeah.
So here's the top level. What's happening with my tweets? Whatever Leo Laporte said in the past week must have been memorable. There were 77 favorites, 63 replies, 23 retweets.
Nice chart.
That's a good chart. I like that. Three interesting people followed me. More than that. Oh, but I only had 10 tweets, which is four fewer than the week before. Here's what I favorited in the years past. It's great stuff. 30% of my tweets, I like this. Self-reflection is powerful stuff. She's definitely changed that one. 30% of my tweets contain the words I, me, mine, or myself. That's an awful lot. It's not all of them. My best response between 5 and 6 p.m. See, that's good to know. You want to keep track about that. So this is good. My most popular tweet a year ago. Gosh, that was a year ago?
I know, right? I say that every day when I see that inside. I'm like,
a year ago, really?
Time flies.
This is fun. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much, Gina Trapani, for being here. We couldn't do it without you. And don't forget to watch her on All About Android, which is every Tuesday evening on this network.
It's a lot of fun.
5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Jeff Jarvis is going to relax today. He's not going to attempt anything too complicated. Whatever you do, stay off ladders. Do not try to fix the well.
Well, we did that last week. I told you that last week.
No, you had well problems last week?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. At the same time, we're putting in a new septic because the septic broke.
I was just going to say, if the well's gone, the septic must be next.
Yeah, it was both of them.
Living. Wow. Country living.
So $28,000 for a place to put my...
So you had to dig a new one?
Whoa, 28 grand?
Oh, yeah, it's expensive.
28 grand.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm living in the city.
Yeah. Well, you have to dig it.
I didn't dig it.
Did you have it? Well, no. Yeah. Go out there with a shovel.
Oh, the technology now is unbelievable.
Oh, it's not just a little backhoe?
Oh, God, no. God, no. It's a big old thing. So there's two cisterns.
Yeah. You have a switch back and forth, right? Every 6 months.
Oh, I didn't know that part. Okay. So it goes into the thing. But then the leach field.
Yeah.
Is, half a football field.
Yep.
Dug down 4 feet of stone and sand.
That's right. Yep.
Then these big black thick tubes across that, and then the white tubes into that.
Yeah.
And then more sand on top of that.
Yeah.
And then of course white pipes sticking up all over my yard now.
Oh.
So at the same time,
we're both on septic systems. We'll have a little conversation.
Yes, yes. I want to off the air. We can paraphrase.
How old was your Carlin. Was your system?
45 years.
Oh yeah. Well, that's you got a good use out of it.
28 grand.
Oh, it's expensive, but that every crazy. You save up every year. You put $1,000 in your. You'll be all right. Save up for your leach field.
I'm never getting a new car. My car is now 10 years old.
It's the joy of country living.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining us. We do Twig this week in Google every Wednesday. It's kind of my last show of the week before my weekend, which is tomorrow and Friday.
And you get to go to Comcast.
I'm devoting my weekend to DMV and Comcast. That's exciting.
It's a good time.
1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Let's see, it's 2000 UTC on the Twit Network. Please stop by and watch us live if you can. If you can't, on-demand audio and video, always available. Twit.tv/Twig or wherever you get your shows, including iTunes, Stitcher, Xbox Music, or any of the great third-party apps developed for the Twit Network, including Roku, Windows Phone, and, of course, iOS and Android. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig.